Welcome to Season 5, Episode 3 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we discuss physical gaming aids. We also take a little turn to discuss what I like to call the Gaming Death March. Again, welcome to Season 5, Episode 3 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week is Brian. George, unfortunately, has moved, and his internet is not connected, so he will not be joining us this week. However, we do have a special guest host in the, I would say the studio if we had a studio, but we have a guest host, Caitlin.
Hello, everybody.
I don't want to mispronounce your last name, or if you don't want me to even give it.
It's Peevler.
Peevler. There we go. Thank you. See, I can't even pronounce my own last name, so that's why I don't try to do other people's. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Now, you are a gamer, right?
Yes.
Yes. But your primary occupation is artist, right?
Yes. Okay. And stay at home mom, of course.
Oh, stay at home mom. You know what? That's a great combination. Artist, gamer, stay at home mom.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know, Brian. You want that gig?
It would be difficult, as I don't have all the right parts. But
you know what I mean.
I would love to work full time on my hobby, and I would love to be home more with my kid. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for filling in for George, and I'm sure George is at home cursing his internet provider at this very moment. Damn you to hell. I'm not going to say more, because otherwise I'm going to go into some sort of rant like Arlie Emery. So there we go. Should we start with the news?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. The news. There's some interesting little things in the news. The first one up, I think, is going to be Gen Con. Of course, the pre-registration is now open for Gen Con. However, that said, if you were hoping to get a VIG pass, you're SOL, because they sold out in 3 minutes.
Whew.
And they actually had more of these VIG passes this year than last year, too.
Dang.
They actually claim that the bad sales for the opening week has increased 41% over last year.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I'm going to correct that. That's wrong. They said they have an opening week increase of 41% year over year, and they have surpassed the 2011 bad. Okay, yeah. So then they passed the 2011 bad sales increase by 74%. So it's actually gotten a lot bigger. I mean, not a lot bigger, but a lot more people are pre-buying their passes this year. So that's kind of cool.
That's cool. I talked to a couple people last year at Gen Con who were in the VIG program, and they really liked it. It seems a little costly, and I don't know that I would see the benefit right away. But for the people who can afford it, they seem to really like it, and obviously it shows because of how quickly they sold.
Yeah, they also say that their exhibit hall booth space it has sold out for 2013. And that is despite the fact that they added 20,000 square feet in for their exhibit hall this year.
Between this year and last year?
Yeah, they added 20,000 additional square feet this year.
Wow. I wonder how.
I don't know. It's a convention hall. And you know what? They have their TARDIS space. I don't know. I mean, after all, they do have a lot of Doctor Who stuff there. I mean, come on. There has to be the TARDIS space.
I think they had a TARDIS, didn't they?
Yeah, actually they did.
Yeah.
I think there's someone that brings that one of those almost every year, I think.
I actually hope to go this year.
You know, I wanted to go this year, but I have other financial responsibilities here. So next year. My kind of thing with Gen Con is I can really only afford to go, well, now that I'm single again, only every other year. But, but on the other hand, I'm doing other things this year. I'm doing other travel, so that kind of counterbalances, because it is expensive. Speaking of that, hotel bookings were actually up 17% this month. And what's interesting is they make a little note that the suburban hotel bookings have also surged 378% year over year.
378%.
Which means that a lot of people couldn't get their bookings, and they actually booked it into their various hotels and stuff in the suburbs, not to mention the fact that it's just plain cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did that last year when I went to Gen Con. I was technically outside the city, and you can do it because they do have a pretty decent bus system. I had to take a cab home at night, but I don't think I'd ever do it again. The city is so well laid out for the inner hotels, and there's so many of them.
Yeah, but it is expensive. I did do it, you know, last year, and it's expensive. The problem, of course, is that, you know, if you don't get your passes early enough, you can't get your housing code to get a hotel downtown.
Yeah.
That is kind of one of the interesting things about the way Gen Con runs it. You have to get your pass, and once you get your pass, they'll send you the housing code for you, and then you can actually use the housing website. Or actually, honestly, I actually found it much more convenient to call in to the housing system because, you know, for myself, I actually went on a press pass last year, and I was in the press block for the housing. The problem was is that the dates that I needed weren't showing up on the website, but when I actually called in, they were actually able to arrange the dates I needed.
Oh, that's good.
So
nice.
So the problem is that the website's great if you can find what you want, but, you know, the people that actually are in the housing bureau, they actually, you know, their systems are more, you know, they have more functionality than we have front up. So that is one thing to think about. And early submission for events will actually close on February 8th, which is, at the time of this recording, 3 days away. And they've already said that they've already surpassed more than 2,700 entries already.
Yeah.
Which beats last year's total at this time, which was apparently 1,468.
Both of those are ridiculous numbers. You know, that's very a lot of events. Numbers.
Well, trust me, have you ever seen the catalog?
I mean, yeah.
It's like you get the print catalog. It's almost like it's just an item you take as a souvenir because you really can't use it.
Yeah. There's a reason why they have applications, you know.
Well, that and it's like if you don't pre-register for your events anyway, half the time you're not going to get what you want because a lot of times they're sold out.
Yeah.
It's you know, Gen Con, for better or worse, is a pretty big event. And they always, you know, there's always something to do. And, you know. And it's not the funny thing is people think, oh, it's just a gaming convention. Yes, it's just a game. It is a gaming convention, but they have a lot of art stuff. They have a lot of cosplay workshops. They have a lot of writing symposiums. Is that the right word? I think that's right.
Symposium is a word, yes.
Yeah,
and writers do go to symposium.
Right, but they have a lot of those because I went to a few last year just because they were interesting topics. So, you know, and of course, you know, they're trying to be a little more family-friendly. They even have some weird just arts and crafts stuff for the non-gamers that, you know, husbands or wives who actually aren't gamers and their gaming husbands and wives drag them to Gen Con. So, no, I'm serious, you know. It's kind of interesting. They haven't left anybody out.
Yeah, so. That's good.
And, you know, there is, there's always for people that have kids, there's actually is, I don't know if it's in the dealer's hall. Was it in the exhibit hall? I always
you're talking about the giant board games and stuff?
Well, I don't know. They always have that little, like, kids area. I think that's
there was a kids area in the dealer's hall last year that was sort of walled off that had, you know, games and things.
Right, for younger kids. I don't know what age groups it quite was. And I think Lego is really starting to show up a lot, too.
Yeah.
And, of course, that a lot of that has to do with this, that they kind of have what I call what I kind of like to call, like, very entry-level RPGs in a way.
Mm-hmm. Their games line now.
Yeah.
I know they take up a large portion of Origins, which is not a convention I attend, but apparently they're getting really big there.
So, anyway, a lot of stuff happens at Gen Con, and it looks like it's already hopping, you know, as it is now. As for those of you who don't know, Gen Con is August 15th through the 18th this year. So that's always a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And if you happen, there's always something pre on Wednesday as well, but I don't remember who exactly that's for. I think that's mostly for the exhibitors, I believe.
Oh, it depends what's going on. I had a couple of events on Wednesday, but it was connected to my freelancing work. So
yeah,
it'll
So there you go. Lots of stuff. And it is the 46th year for Gen Con. Gen Con 46. That seems kind of weird, doesn't it?
It's twice as old as I am.
Well.
46 does seem like a big number, because how old is D&D?
Actually,
next year is a D&D anniversary, right?
It's, yeah. It might be 45. I don't know. Because, you see, that's the thing. I don't remember if Gen Con is older than D&D or not.
What would they be doing at Gen Con?
It was originally a war game.
Was it?
Yeah, mostly war games.
Okay, so that explains it then. Then it's got to be older than D&D, because I think D&D is coming up on its 40th next year.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, I honestly can't keep track of how old D&D is. You know, because of course the question is, well, is D&D that old? Are you counting that from an official, you know, rule book release version? Are you counting the pre-release stuff that happened before that? You know, when was its birth date? You know, kind of thing. It's like, well, who all really? Right. That's splitting hairs to me. It's like whenever you want to call it. So, all right. Why don't we move it to the next item? Unless you have something else you want to add about Gen Con.
No, I think we've done sucking up to the Gen Con people.
You know, I throw it out there just because, you know, it is a lot of fun to go to. I mean, I know last year I didn't have as much fun, but that was mostly my own fault. I didn't plan. I didn't. One of the things is that the registration closes, the pre-registration, event registration, new events get added, and you have to keep checking to make sure you get all the events that you want. So yeah.
I wanted so bad to go last year.
Well, if you're going to get to go this year, you know, yeah. As they say, good on you. That's fantastic.
I just ended up having a busy week prior to Gen Con.
Well, you know, one of our old hosts, Zach, he was going to try to meet me at Gen Con, I think, on Saturday or Sunday, and he just couldn't do it. Yeah. You know, I think his family got sick or something. I don't remember 100%. So it's like, I understand. No worries. Keep your sickness to yourself.
Yeah, a bunch of people were saying, no, you should go to Gen Con. You can just have your baby at the convention.
Yeah, because that was her busy week, was she was giving birth.
I see. No worries.
Yeah. I mean, it was 2 hours away from the hospital.
Yeah, no, that would never be good. That would be good. So you live close to Indianapolis then?
I live in Louisville.
Okay.
Kentucky.
Well, so the good news is for you, for me, it's very, you know, I have to fly out there. So it's always, that's an added expense. So, but that's it. So next up on the news docket, as they like to say, this one's kind of just an interesting little tidbit. It was that Hasbro reported that they're going to do a 10% layoff goal by 2015. And someone proposed the question, how will that affect WotC? You know, how will that affect Wizards? Will they suffer an additional 10% layoff? Because they always seem to lay off a lot of people in December.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, I guess they had just have Hasbro generally overall just has not been doing as well as they think that, you know, they think they should have. I mean, you know, there's all this weird stock analysis, which honestly I don't quite understand.
I don't either.
You know, it's like, oh, we didn't quite get the dollars per share that we were looking for. So, you know, the economy was bad last year. What do you expect?
Would be an awkward time to cut staff at WotC without cutting a line. You know, they'd have to cut Dungeon Command or something, because they're pretty bare bones as it is gearing up for the launch of a new edition.
Yeah, I would hazard, you know, but it is an interesting question, because, you know, WotC probably is not as autonomous as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I've never worked there, so who knows? But it's an interesting speculation. So I guess we'll just have to see on that one. Now, the next one that comes up, which is kind of interesting, the Roll20, I guess, virtual tabletop.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
What was that?
It's amazing.
I've never used it. However, Tabletop Forge, which is another virtual tabletop, has kind of shut down. So they're actually officially endorsing Roll20. And I think some of the people that worked on Virtual Tabletop are actually going to start working on the Roll20 product as well.
So let me just correct you a little bit.
Yeah, please do, because it's like...
Tabletop Forge was really just one guy.
Okay, well, so...
And he had a very successful Kickstarter. more successful than I think he knew was going to happen. You know, and it ended up being a lot of work that was more than one person could really handle. And he did not want to sort of back out on his Kickstarter supporters. So he's joining Roll20. He's going to be on their mod team. And they're sort of rolling Tabletop Forge into Roll20.
Yeah.
As a feature.
Well, that's cool. And I
so he's not leaving. He's not abandoning people. They are becoming one giant robot.
Yeah, the release that I saw said that Roll20 was going. I guess they were going to all the backers for Tabletop Forge were going to be. They're just kind of considering them backers for Roll20 as well.
Yeah. The Tabletop Forge backers sort of come out ahead because they're kind of getting everything as opposed to just getting Forge.
So that's really cool. And of course, the new TSR games has also actually the Gax magazine actually has an article about it.
So on the Forge?
On Roll20.
I don't have a Gygax magazine yet. I've been holding out for the PDF.
Yes, actually, but that's the next news item is Gygax magazine was unveiled. So, but in which is, I guess the PDF, you can buy the physical one now.
You can.
Yeah, you can actually go to their website and order the current, you know, the current magazine, and at least the images that they have online for it, the Gax title looks like it. They pretty much just use the same font as the old Dragon magazine. I'm serious. That's what it looks.
No, I've seen it. It's very similar, if not the same. It's probably not the same just for legal reasons, but it's very similar.
It's very close. I mean. My first question was, is this a mock-up that they just kind of threw together? Because the layout of the front of the magazine looks very similar to the way Dragon magazine used to be.
Well, they haven't been shy about this. You know, they want it to feel like the old Dragon magazine. And that's very cool because a lot of people miss it.
Right. But I'll have a link in the show notes that actually lists, that shows an image gallery of, I guess, the contents page.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows you what articles that they hold. And while they're trying to do some old school stuff, they're not 100% old school either.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But right now, again, they're going to do it quarterly. So there's only going to be 4 magazines a year,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. And you can get a subscription or right now for a year, or you can actually just buy the single issue. And as you pointed out, their PDFs will be coming out. And yep. They're making them so that they will be suitable for use on your iPad.
Excellent, because that's where I'll be reading it.
Yeah. Right. And I guess it says should be available. I don't get this. It says the print description. This is what I don't get. I don't get if this is saying that the PDF will be available after February 7th. Or what? Because it says the print subscription does not include the digital versions, but should be available after the 7th. It will be available on PDF as well as suitable for an iPad. So I don't quite get the...
It's poor sentence structure, but we know that the PDF is coming soon. They've said this before. They're running a little bit behind their intended schedule, but it's all coming.
Right. And of course, you know, they said that only 5,000 copies are printed. And if they run out of those 5,000, they will print more. However, any reprints will be clearly marked as reprints.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that's kind of cool for people who are collectors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings. I understand that. That is kind of cool, but I have to have mixed feelings about, like, are you buying a magazine just to collect it or buying a magazine to use it?
Well, people do both. It's kind of like comic books. If a comic book gets a second printing, it almost always has an alternate cover, which is a very cool way to distinguish the two printings. And people are going to buy both. Some collectors are going to buy both because they want to collect them all. Some people are going to buy either just because they want to read the comic book.
Yeah, I guess it just blows my mind a little bit. So... But and they did say that one thing that they did make very clear is that, no, they do not they will not be doing any articles about any former TSR campaign settings since they do not have the licenses for those,
mm-hmm.
or copyrights for those, which makes sense. I don't know why people would be like, oh, why don't you, can't you do an article? You know, and that's actually a legitimate question for any type of publication. It's like, yeah, no, I can't do an article about, you know, certain game settings that I'm not the copyright license holder without their permission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, it's not like, it's not like when we game at home, we're like, oh, I'm going to use this game world and make this change, and who cares? It's my game in my house.
Yep.
So, but when you publish it, there's some legal issues there.
Absolutely. You can't publish or whether or not you could get away with it is one thing, but people won't publish game mechanics for a game that they don't have proper license for. What I used to write for Cobalt Quarterly, one of the games they added in later on was for the Dragon Age system. But they weren't rating for Dragon Age, they were rating for the Age system, which is specifically the generic mechanics that Green Ornine owns, not connected to the Dragon Age universe. It's all very specific, and even then you have to get permission. But there's still a lot of stuff you can do. So well, I mean, I am high hopes for Gygax Magazine.
Right, and that was the original, opus of the OGL was is like you can write stuff that uses the OGL rules,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have to ask permission, but you know, obviously that didn't cover any settings because all that is copyrighted.
Yep.
So, and you had one last little news item in here.
I did. I tacked one at the end, which is something that happened recently where Cam Banks, people probably know his work from Margaret Weiss Productions. He's heavily tied to the Cortex Plus system, which includes one of my favorite games, Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, is now the brand manager at Atlas Games. So that's his sort of day job, as it were, now. But he's still working with Margaret Weiss Productions.
Well, that's very cool.
Things are coming out and doing some writing and doing some line development. I thought that was very cool. I'm not terribly familiar with a lot of Atlas's current game products, but they have a bit of a history. If anyone was going to sort of push it as a brand, Cam would do a really good job because he's done a great job over at Margaret Weiss with their Cortex Plus line, linking games that really have nothing to do with each other. When you look at things like Smallville and Leverage and the Marvel Universe, I mean, these are not like things. But he's done a pretty good job of creating a very solid foundation there.
Yeah, very cool. And one little item that I forgot to put down that was in my head was that, of course, speaking of various games and people, the Fate Core Rules Kickstarter has finished, and mm-hmm. it actually hit its $400,000 goal. So those of you who are waiting for the Dresden Files Accelerated, they're actually going to end up doing that. And against
if only I could find a game to play in.
Yeah. You know, I understand. I actually did, finally. I mean, I don't know who. I think it was you, Brian. We were talking about that. You were trying to convince me to go ahead. I actually did go ahead.
You got to back these things, man.
And I actually did put $15 in so that I could get the soft cover print of the Fate Accelerated. So. Mm-hmm.
We should mention, too, before we move on, just real quick, that our friend at Inkwell Ideas, his Kickstarter just finished successfully as well. We had him on in a recent episode, and he was doing a Kickstarter for his Creature and Encounter RPG card decks, and that finished at nearly $14,000. He had a $9,500 goal, so we're very excited for him.
That's very cool. So, excellent stuff. I didn't really bother looking at Kickstarters this week. We will... In the next episode, we'll probably be more Kickstarter heavy. But let's just go on. I think that's it for the news. Anything else that we need to really cover?
That was enough, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting. So, topic one this week was physical gaming aids.
Yeah, this is something I wanted to touch on briefly. Because I know everyone has sort of a different style. This will probably be a relatively short topic, but
who knows.
Curious about what people like to use at the table that aren't necessarily a part of the game. So I think an example that comes up often is tokens or some sort of initiative tracker. When I'm at my game table and I want to track initiative, I have a little whiteboard that I use, and I write people's names down in order. Or sometimes I'll just track it right off my laptop. I do like the little whiteboard because everyone can see it. If I'm tracking things off my laptop, I've got to constantly be telling people who's on deck. And the reason why I do this is because I don't use a DM screen when I'm with my home group. Everything is very much out in the open except for my notes. But if I'm at a convention, I'll have that DM screen up, which is also a very useful initiative tracker. I'll take some index cards and I'll write people's names on both sides, and I'll just put them in order across the screen, and I can just slide things down and pick the guy up at the end and put him at the other end when he's taken his turn, which works really well and is very good visual representation for people so they can see how things are shifting. And I'm working on Pulp, which, you know, I'm still hoping to release in early March. And that's got a card element that contains sort of, you know, the basis of characters and the basis of rules. And I really like that tactical feel to things. But the way it's designed is you don't need the cards if you don't want it. But I like to be able to have like a spread of adversaries in front of me. And if I don't have my computer screen, the best way to do that is on little cards. And that's something that came from my 4E game. Before 4th edition had a lot of digital tools, one of the things I was doing was printing out monster stat blocks from the compendium and pasting them onto index cards. So I was just curious, if you guys use any aids like that? Are there any sort of physical things that you like to have when you're playing or running a game?
Well, definitely a stack of index cards is always useful. I mean, I think I've been using index cards since I started gaming, because that's not true. Because I started gaming when I was, what is that, 8, 9?
Oh, geez. So that was, what, like 1911, right?
1911? No. That was when I was in the third grade, fourth grade. The irony is that I was visiting my father, and my brother was playing AD&D, and I got interested in AD&D because I had this fascination with the medieval period at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I went back, and then the following year I came back and tried some AD&D again, and I think my father bought me, I didn't get the box set for AD&D, but I got the basic rule book that was just the rule book, which is all you needed. You didn't need the module.
Sure.
And that's how I actually started playing D&D with that. Although some guys I knew actually had B1, and we actually kind of made up our own rules that we were using B1 the previous year. So, but yeah, index cards, definitely, you know, I've used it for, you know, initiative tracking. I've used it for, you know, just to write notes, small maps even, like, here's the map that you found, or hiding parts of the map. Especially like if I've already drawn out a map, you know, I'll put index cards over areas that they don't normally see.
Sure.
You know, I've done that. But let's see what else is coming to mind. But you were talking about just physical elements.
Yeah.
Definitely. The interesting thing is Savage Worlds is very big on the physical elements because, you know, obviously you have tokens and you have the playing cards. And that's one of the nice things I like about Savage Worlds is that I like trying to find, if I'm playing a particular genre of game, and if I can find a deck of cards that's really good for that, I like using that set of playing cards. That's why I back the Call of Cthulhu playing card Kickstarter, because it's like, great, if I ever play something that's kind of Call of Cthulhu-esque, I have the right cards for that.
Yeah.
So
I like that, yeah.
You know, so like if I play Deadlands some more, I'd like to get almost some cowboy oriented cards. You know, so that, and it's funny because they, you know, there's all these specialty playing cards out there. I mean, they're standard playing cards, but there's always a specialty theme. So that would be great, you know, play with those. I'd actually, if I ever played Slipstream, I'd like to get like almost like a Flash Gordon backed deck. I think that would be cool. I know I'm just talking out of my ass, but that's always fun.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's something simple that you can do to sort of help immerse people, to tie the mechanics to the story.
So, but yeah, definitely tokens. Originally, when I was originally playing Solomon Kane, I just used poker chips, and we actually used the different colors to mean different things. You know, red poker chips for wounds, white tokens for if you were, if you know, when you, God, what, I can't even remember. What is it, stunned or the first wound level?
Sure.
Shaken, there we go. When you were shaken, you know, there was a white token if you were shaken so that you knew. And the nice thing about them is you can place them next to the miniatures on the board. Like when I'm playing the bad guys, I just put the miniatures next to them on the board. And it's like, hey, we know who's shaken, who's not. And then we would use the blue chips as the bennies. Now, the problem got to be is that when you play Deadlands, you can't do that because they use all the colored poker chips and they all mean new things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you actually hit, there's actually like a, you know, so many white chips, so many blue chips, so many red chips, and you mix them together and people randomly draw like their three bennies that they normally get mm-hmm. per session, and they could get two whites and a red or three whites and a blue, you know, that are two whites and a blue, that kind of thing. So I was like, dang, I need to go out there. What's interesting is people have actually produced little printable, you know, things that you can, like, you can cut out and, like, fold over. And, you know, there's, you know, shaken tokens and there's, which look like little lightning bolts. mm-hmm. And there's wound markers. And there's something else. There were a few other markers that I wouldn't normally use. So that, you know, that's kind of cool that they have those. And then, yeah. Of course, the other thing, of course, was in Solomon Kane. One of the mechanics, the additional mechanics they had for Solomon Kane was when you spend a Benny, you have a 1 in 3 chance to go, you have to roll a 5 or 6, I think, to get Righteous Rage, which if you get that, you get 3 rounds of Righteous Rage. So I wanted some sort of token system to indicate that. And what I did is one of my friends does a lot of black powder. And he had a caliber of bullets that he doesn't use. Mm-hmm. Somehow he just had them. So I got this box of basically musket balls. And since obviously Solomon Kane takes in an area where they're using, you know, wheel locks and stuff, it's very indicative. And so I just hand them like 3 of these, you know, little musket balls, and then they hand them back to me every round that they do. And so that keeps track of how many times that they actually, how many rounds they're in Righteous Rage.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fairly simple.
Yeah. No, but it's cool. It's a fun little thing that you can do with, you know, simple materials at the table. I like that.
Yeah.
Now, I know, Caitlin, you play online a bit, and you use different tools for that. But you do get to play in person, not as often as you'd like. Is there anything that you like to use physically in your games?
Well, it's been a while since we've actually played on a table. I am pretty sure the last time I played a game on a table was 4th edition, and it was at PAX.
Oh, that's no good, Kate.
That is no good. I know.
What about online? Do you ever, you know, reference something outside the game table mechanic?
Not really, but normally I'm...
that's fine, because I know people don't.
It's just been so long. But when we were playing on the table, my husband and I actually went through and scoured eBay, and we actually got props to use for each player that represented one magic item that we had on our character.
Oh, that's cool.
And each one did like a different thing. And if we didn't bring it to the table with us to the game, we weren't allowed to use that magic item.
Oh, that's rough. That's a little.
Another thing I liked to do was I was playing a pyromancer at the time, and we had like a bunch of, you know, the WotC minis. You know, they kind of the plastic ones that are like see through and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I took one of those little, you know, watch battery powered tea lights that look like little candles.
Yeah.
Tore the flame off and stuck my summons on top of there. So, and we had the lights dim so you can actually, you know, my mini is glowing on the table.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
And then I never use pre-made maps. I always have to sit and draw out my own maps and my own monsters and everything. If I get the chance to.
Sure.
I can't, I just don't want to, like, if I'm like running on the fly, I'll use tokens and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But if, when I'm running on the computer, I have a little bit more freedom to, you know, to make my stuff without having to worry about printing it off.
Yep.
Which we've had.
Yeah.
We actually recently changed the style of map we're using since we switched systems. We are no longer using a gridded map. We are using maps from video games for our combats.
Huh. Yeah, you showed me an example of that. I think the one that I saw wasn't overhead. It was sort of like a side scroll.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very different. I liked that.
Because the system that we're using isn't exactly as tactical as 4th edition was.
Mm-hmm.
But this makes it so you can still have that level of tactfulness in your game, but have it a little bit more immersive, too.
That's cool. This is for your 13th age game, right?
Yes.
Awesome.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I was just, I don't know why, but when she was talking about artwork and stuff, I was just thinking the other thing that I've tried to use,
mm-hmm.
but I've never really been successful at, because it just, I don't know, is the Paizo Game Mastery item decks.
Oh, yeah.
Cards. You know, very cool, because it's like, okay, well, this is the items you find, you know, here mm-hmm. you go. So that I always thought that was kind of cool, but trying to keep track of that stuff was a little bit difficult sometimes.
I like the idea of those. I've seen them. I know people who really like them. But I also don't want to buy 30 of them. And I feel like I don't want to be so restricted. You know, I want to be able to find a cool item and just throw it out there and not have someone be disappointed because it doesn't have a cool picture.
I think where I think they're really useful just for fun is if you're actually using one of the adventure paths and then you mm-hmm. actually have the item deck for that adventure path.
Sure. I can see how that would work really well, because then you have exactly what you need.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
but you could have done exactly what Kate does, Jeff. Like, if you hand out the item, you give them the card, and if they don't show up with that card, well, they lost the item. Doesn't work this week for some reason.
Yeah, but, you know, but it's interesting. You know, some of the people I knew used to have, you know, like, fake weapons and stuff they used to bring to the table for just dramatic effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, I mean, there is that. I mean, there is that element of, you know, props that you can actually bring to the table. I mean, I don't know why, but I'm thinking, like, in a Call of Cthulhu game, it would be great to have, like, some sort of, I mean, fake, weird little tomb that you can hand them. You find this book.
Sure.
Do you open it? I don't know. That I think that would be kind of creepy and cool in that kind of a game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess that's where it is. It's like, you know, I guess for me, some of it's like, you know, some of it's like actual practical, like, you know, okay, let's have sticky notes so we can write stuff down, or, you know, obviously index cards, or I have these index cards, these mean certain things, or, you know, I like I said, index cards I've used for lots of things, including large monster stand-ins on the table. Well, let's face it, miniatures, yeah, if you use miniatures, you know, there's really some large creatures that you really can't, but I don't have a miniature of a dragon, I'm sorry.
I have two. We have both the white and the black dragon miniatures.
Got a question. Is that in plastic or is that lead?
That's plastic.
Yeah. You know, which makes a lot of sense. I'm a big fan. You know, and of course with the new 3D, you know, what I'm impressed with is, if you think about it, it'll be very interesting to see what happens when more and more people have 3D printers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think of some of the cool stuff that you could just have at the table when you do that.
Yeah.
You know, especially like little mini props, if you will.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've ever really used at a table that's kind of not necessarily required for gameplay, but I've used.
Well, there's lots of stuff I've used. You know, I've had handouts, and certainly we've used maps to some minis when they're not necessarily called for. But I just wanted to get a feel of some of the stuff that we've done. This is a topic that we could do, you know, a whole episode on if we wanted to. Why don't we jump to the next topic, just so we can talk a little bit about that, because I know I want to give Kate a chance to talk at the end about at least the Kickstarter that she's working on right now.
Okay, sure. That's fair enough. Okay. Well, I called it the Death March of Gaming, and specifically, this is I call it that because have any of you guys ever been in a game where you realize that everyone is bored in the game, but like one person.
Ugh.
yes.
And usually that one person might, you know, in some cases, it might just be you. You're the game master, or you might be, or the game master might be the one person. And it's just like, when will this end? I was just kind of curious because it's like, I don't know. I mean, how do you handle that? I mean, how have you guys handled that in the past?
I think I'm lucky in that I haven't had that problem since high school, where, you know, I've got a pretty consistent gaming group now. We're all pretty open. You know, if somebody, sometimes we'll have the inverse where one or two people aren't having fun, and then they're usually able to talk to me about it, you know, outside of game, and we'll work something out and sort of reinvest them into the game. But I've certainly heard a lot of people talk about, you know, like watching their game group die session after session. And I feel for those people. And I feel like the way that I avoid it most of the time is with open, out-of-character dialogue, either, you know, before or after the game, or especially getting ready to run a new arc. Like, you know, figuring out what people really liked about the thing that happened last time. What they like to do that they thought they were going to get to do that they haven't had a chance to do yet, and just being flexible as a DM and working that stuff in there, because it's the game's, you know, for everybody.
Oh, I know. I just it's interesting because it's like I think there's telltale signs that when there's a death march going on, and especially if you're the game master and you just don't quite realize it, if you've had a lot of player shifts. New players might not just be as interested in your campaign as you are.
Sure.
And I've seen that. Specifically recently, I've been playing with a guy who, for better or worse, he was running a particular module and he wanted to finish it. Problem is that our group just kind of kept changing players, and you can only, since it took place on a small island, you know, it's really hard to come up with excuses of why other players are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then most people just were, you know, most people weren't interested. I mean, people were like, okay, I don't really care. I think the evil bad guy should just, we should just let the evil bad guy win and we'll go live in a hole for as long as we can live. That's our answer. You know, that's pretty bad when it's like the heroes are going like, I don't feel like being heroic anymore. Screw this. I'm going to go retire and be a fisherman. So, you know, but I've been in games like that where I'm just like, okay, you know, and then of course, you know, I don't get me wrong, I understand, because like I said, I've been a game master where it's like you're really interested in something, maybe certain aspects, and nobody tells you. But
yeah.
But then you look at everyone and like everyone is bored. Why are those two guys over there deciding to play Magic on the side while I'm gaming? That should be a clue that maybe I should be doing something else.
Yeah, that's kind of a big tip off right there.
I guess the bigger question is how do you recognize when your players are bored?
I think the biggest way to recognize when the players are bored is when they're not engaging. When people are on their phones, I mean, that's a big one. You know, I think these days when people get bored, the first thing they generally do is they grab their phone. And that's maybe just a product of our time. And sometimes that's because the player's tired and they've had a long day or whatever. But if that's coming up consistently, that's a big one. If people seem to, it comes to their turn and they don't know what to do, and it's not because of analysis paralysis, it's because they don't know what just happened, obviously, even if they were looking at the table, they weren't paying attention.
Analysis paralysis.
And that's generally
paralysis.
Because someone's exhausted or bored.
I love that term. I don't think I've seen that. I just don't think I've actually used it in that manner before.
Yeah,
because I've known people like that. It's like you get to their especially in an initiative based gaming system. It's like you get to their action and it's like, okay, we're going to take a break for half an hour while Bob decides what he's going to do.
Well, sure, because you can have so many options that it's not. You almost feel intimidated to choose the right one, or you want to make sure you don't forget something.
Yeah,
and that can, especially for a tactically minded player, that can be really tough, because you want to make sure not only do you do everything you want to do, but you do it in the right order.
Option overload.
Yeah. Well, I you know what? Even when I have too many options, I fall back on the old rule I learned in the Navy, which is doing anything is better than doing nothing, because nothing will surely kill you.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, okay. That was just kind of it. I just was kind of curious because it's like I kind of ran into that where it resolved itself without me anyone actually getting involved. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, you know, communication is key, but the question, you know, people have egos and people have, I want to say egos. Maybe I don't want to say ego because that's not quite the right term. But I guess the answer is people have feelings and sometimes people are more sensitive than others.
Sure.
So that could
be. For our group, it was like we just stopped playing with that one person.
Well, I don't, you know, but you don't want to do that because it's like, it's not like that person's a bad person.
This person was horrible, though.
Oh, well. Then you have an excuse. I'm always a big fan of it's like, I've had players that are really horrible. And
he was
like,
playing the healer, and he was refusing to heal me because I would not tell him something.
Ah, yes. I just call those people dicks.
And after that happened, we just quit the game, which sucked because we were everyone else was having fun until he started doing that.
Yeah, well, I've actually had the situation where I've had to I chose not to invite people back. Are we gaming this weekend? No. I'm not going to lie. I mean, sometimes there are some people that you just feel like, I just don't want to hurt your feelings that bad. I'm not angry at you, but you're just not the right person for this gaming group.
Yeah. I had never liked this person to begin with, but it was one of my husband's friends.
Ah, joy.
And he had run a game for us at one point. Like, he wanted us to all play Star Wars D20 with him. Mm-hmm. And five of the characters were him in the game.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah, GM NPC? No. Our GMPC, I think, is that's what that's called, right? I think
it was horrible.
Yeah,
I was just so bored. I got so much artwork done while I was sitting at the table while he was running.
You know, this does remind me. I actually gamed with a guy who, game master or player, he only had three characters. Didn't matter what game it was. It was one. He had three characters that he had as templates: the big dumb jock kind of character, the slap happy thief, as he called it, and then the egomaniacal necromancer that's trying to take over the world. And all of his characters were one of those. In a science fiction game, I'm a robot scientist and I'm building my robotic army to take over the world. Great, thanks.
Oh, fun.
So, but I mean, and the funny thing is that when you would meet NPCs of his, they were one of those three. So it's like, if he wasn't trying to take over the world and he wasn't big and dumb, then he had to be the slap happy thief. Now, that might be, he might be a healer, but he was kind of the slap happy thief kind of character. Oh my God, why? Get a grip, get a new character. So,
all right. I know how you feel.
All right, well, that's, I've beat this one into a dead horse, so we're going to go on and move on to you. How's that sound? And you can kind of tell us about this Kickstarter that you've been doing.
Oh, okay.
Since that's the way Brian wanted to roll tonight, correct?
Yeah, you know, I know that right now, Kate, you're doing all the art, all of it.
All of it.
For Conquering Corsairs, Pirates of the Silver Seas, which is a Kickstarter that actually just launched very, very recently.
Yesterday.
Yesterday, right? So when this episode drops tomorrow, it'll be a full 2 days old. As of this recording, it's got $3,000 of its $7,500 goal, so it's moving right along, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
and it's a card game based on pirates, if you could not tell from the
title. No, say it isn't so.
It looks really cool. It's sort of a deck-building game, but it's got a seasonal mechanic where different types of turns happen in a spring, summer, fall, winter, and it rotates. I know that you had an opportunity to play this out just recently, Kate, but is there anything that you'd want to tell us about the game that, you know, sort of makes it stand out from other games you've played?
I've only played one or two deck-building games. Miss Katana School for Girls was the last one that I played.
Yeah.
I think the thing that sets Conquering Corsairs apart from other deck building games is depending on, it's for 2 to 4 players, and each player gets a ship. Depending on what ship you get your own deck that you can pull from that nobody else can.
That's very cool. You know, the sort of built-in faction system.
Yeah.
Well, you forgot the most important thing. You're doing some of the artwork, right?
All of the artwork.
All the that's right. It's funny because if you take a look at the Kickstarter, and we'll have a link in the show notes, at the very bottom, there's in the risks and challenges, they pretty much lay out. It's like, well, the game's done. We need a lot of art, which is sort of why we're asking for money. And that's like the only problem we might have is if we need the art gets too overwhelming and we might need another artist. But right now we're trying to do it all on Caitlin.
What's going to happen is if they raise enough money, I am paying for my sister to come out here and live with me to watch my kids while I bust out all this artwork.
Well, you artify the project.
Hey, we'll see. That's why our listeners need to need to contribute. So you can have time, visit with your sister, and actually do fantastic art, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
See, it's a win-win situation for everybody.
Yay!
So people who like games like this should definitely check it out, because especially with some of the mid and higher reward tiers, there's still some room for development, for backer involvement. Even though all the mechanics are basically worked out for the set, things need to be named and themes need to be sort of collected, and they want to build a little bit of a backstory into the factions, and that's where a lot of the patron input is coming in. So if you back this project, you'll sort of be able to customize the lore, as it were, of the game. And if it ends up doing really well, maybe there'll be more, and you may have a real lasting impact on things. I like stuff like that. I think that's really cool.
And besides, it's about pirates, right?
It's about pirates.
And it's actually really easy to pick up and learn, too.
Which is always awesome.
You know, which by the way, as we know, is great at conventions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to... I'm actually hoping I might get a couple advanced copies for the convention I'm going to in June. So, like, I want to bring this with me. It seems like fun. I bet it would do great at an anime convention.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm saying any convention, it's always fun to have some sort of game in your backpack that you can play at like a moment's notice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've always been a big fan of lunch money for that. But that's just me.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have it out even if I'm not wandering the convention center. If I get an artist alley table, it's like, I'm going to be sitting there probably possibly bored all day. Just like, maybe I'll just have this game out to play while people are walking around.
See, this is my artwork, too. No.
That's right.
I have an extra couple copies to sell.
All right. Well, anything else before we go? Because we don't have any audio comments this week. We're really depressed
about
that.
No audio comments this
week. At least
week.
I'm depressed. Are you depressed, Brian?
I'm so depressed.
Yeah. So please, send us audio comments, even if it's just questions or, well, you just want to say hi. I'll be more than happy to play those on the air and say hi back. I don't know about you. So, and of course, you can. The great news is that you guys can do that either by calling our 888 number, which is, of course, 1-888-643-6322, or you can actually go to our homepage and go to the leave a audio comment, and it will go to launch our SpeakPipe application that we're using. And that is a Flash app, by the way, for people that don't know. And you can go ahead and record an audio message, and then it will actually email it to us, which is very cool. Which is actually very cool for some of our listeners that are not in the continental United States, or actually are Hawaii and Alaska too. But someone who's not in the United States, it's great, because we actually had people go like, when are you going to be able to have us do voice comments that are not in the U.S.? Well, now we can. And it looks like when the application gets out of beta, which it is in beta, when it gets out of beta, we will probably be dropping the 800 number for the first time in 5 years.
Cool.
Because it's like, well, I'm going to go ahead and pay for it. And, One App, right now it's still in beta, so it's free. And until then, we have both. But if you don't want to send us a voicemail message, you can always just send us an email, info@rpgcircus.com. And Brian would be more than happy to read those on the air, because I'm not so good at it. That was the deal, right?
That was the deal, yeah. I tend to read the emails.
So there you go. Because if you ever listen to the episodes where I read the emails, bad idea. Well, you know, I really need a teleprompter, and I can't afford a teleprompter. So not going to happen. And then, of course, you can always go to our Facebook page and comment or do whatever. Send us notes, send us links, whatever you'd like to do. Because, you know, I try to use Facebook on those pages, but I'm not as good as it. Especially since you guys don't join and actually tell us to do something. Otherwise, it's just basically me just saying, hi, this is what's going on, and this is what I'm thinking today. So if you want to enjoy that, then go ahead and join and send us hate mail that way.
That's nice.
Hey, what can I say? It's not hate mail. It's all good. It's all constructive criticism. So, anything else for this episode before we?
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to plug, Kate? I know this isn't the only project you're working on right now.
And I also have my webcomic I'm working on, which actually I'm getting ready to start something new for that. I'm going to be converting the entire setting for my webcomic into a setting for 13th Age.
Awesome. This is Experiment 073 we're talking about, right?
Yes.
We'll make sure we have a link to that in the show notes so people can check it out. It's very cool. Very cool little webcomic.
That's yes. Great. I love webcomics.
It's a mod podge of fantasy and apocalyptic and sci-fi and everything.
Hey, I'm always looking for an additional webcomic to read in the morning to fortify me for the day of work that I have ahead.
That's right.
I'm serious, you know. It's like having the Far Side calendar. You have one image per day. You have to read it. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to make it through the day. So.
Well, I'm looking forward to that because there's a lot about Experiment 73 that you haven't really revealed yet. We're very much in the dark about a lot. Yeah. And I want to know more, Kate. So
once I've introduced all four characters, I will start revealing more stuff.
Okay.
I'm only on the third.
Okay, well, there you go. So there's something to look forward to for our listeners. You know, hey, go there and find out more.
Yeah.
Click here if you want to know more information. So, okay, well, I think that's it for this episode, unless we have anything else. I think we're good, right?
I'm good.
All right. Well, I love being good. Well, actually, yeah, well, we won't have any crude comments. Anyway, so... I think that's it for this episode, and we want to thank you for listening, and hopefully we'll see you next time. RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.